Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
Thank you and good morning. Conservative religious groups, fundamentalists, evangelicals, and others are generally credited with opposing all sex education. The truth of the matter is, that is not true. It is my considered judgment that most people, whether conservative or otherwise, are strongly against sex education when it is taught or when it is attempted to be taught from a morally neutral viewpoint. There actually is no way for teachers or preachers to approach any idea without some kind of moral values being involved. Even when we teach English or math or history, there is always a moral element to that teaching. That is especially true when we're dealing with such a vital and intimate issue as human sexuality. When we ignore the moral aspect of sex, we are heading towards sexual destruction, as is so obvious in modern America. I personally have taught sex education most of my adult life. In my dealings with young people, in churches, in various communities, and in colleges and universities, I have discussed at length what the Bible teaches on human sexual functioning. I do the same from pulpits throughout our brotherhood and plan to keep on doing it. When I was teaching marriage and family courses at Freed Hardeman University and at Southern Christian University, I always included a rather extensive unit on human sexuality. Incidentally, I had no objections from the students or from their parents or from the college administration. In fact, both students and their parents have often expressed appreciation for our discussions on sex. I still hear from parents and students about our class discussions on human sexuality. Are there churches and individual Christians who would prefer that sex not be taught from the pulpit or in Bible classes? There almost certainly are. There always have been, and there probably always will be. But this should not prevent our teaching what the Scriptures say about human sexuality. If the Bible speaks on any topic, and it speaks extensively on human sexuality, then gospel preachers and teachers have a right, in fact, they have an obligation, to teach on that topic. Surely preachers do not want to be condemned in the judgment for failure to preach the whole counsel of God. Acts 20:26-27. Many churches, including some churches of Christ, have acted as if the Bible has nothing to say about sex. At least, if it has anything to say, it ought to be dealt with privately, not in mixed company. How tragic that many of our young people, and a substantial number of our older people, have warped ideas about sex. Churches and families have failed to impart healthy ideas about sex. And so many who call themselves Christians are either ignorant about their bodies, or how God intended our bodies to be used, or they prefer not to talk about it. How can we fail to talk about sex when the media, academia, and liberal religion are distorting God's ideas about sex? It is inexcusable for Christians to allow the liberal establishment in our nation to have a monopoly on the moral values our nation promotes. May I encourage all parents to learn about human sexual functioning and to be sure to impart the truth to their children and to their young people. Obviously, the teaching must be done at the appropriate ages and with the right attitudes and materials. How foolish for some of our school systems to unduly stimulate the sexual interests of small children. In many cases, our schools and the media, especially television, steal our children's childhoods from them. Let me give you one example. A number of years ago, some very foolish educators in Memphis, Tennessee, proposed to discuss birth control with first graders, six-year-olds. I am thankful that wiser heads prevailed. Nobody should be so morally insensitive and foolish. My lesson today on sex education has been in the process of preparation for years. I have read dozens and dozens of books dealing with the topic. But the immediate motivation came from an article in the Tennessean, November 29, 1993. The article was written by Jim Abrams of Associated Press and has the title, Elders, Sex Education is Crucial. The subtitle of the article is, It Would Help End Social Woe, She Says. The article discusses Joycelyn Elder's desires and plans to install in our public schools a comprehensive health education program, which would include sex education. If any of this comes to you as a surprise, it simply means you have not been keeping up with what is happening in Washington. When Dr. Elders, the Surgeon General of the United States, was being questioned by the Congress, she freely admitted her schemes to make sex education universally available. And she has also stood by her immoral decision to kill as many babies as possible. The kind of sex education Washington supports will increase the number of pregnancies among our teenagers and provide plenty of action for the abortuaries operated by the most powerful baby killer in the world, Planned Parenthood. If these indictments sound too far-fetched, please listen as I document what I have just said. The article in the Tennessean argues that a comprehensive health education plan from kindergarten through 12th grade is crucial to reducing the number of children born out of wedlock, according to Surgeon General Joycelyn Elders, page 1A. There is a very serious problem with Dr. Elders' contention. It is absolutely and inexcusably false. Sex education, as taught in most American school systems, does not reduce out-of-wedlock pregnancies. It increases pregnancies among teenagers. It increases the incidence of venereal diseases and the number of abortions among teens. To pretend otherwise reveals either one's ignorance or one's immorality. I am convinced that Dr. Elders is not ignorant. Actually, dozens of studies have been done on the effectiveness of sex education in our public schools. The results are so damaging and so disheartening that people with reasonable moral values have to oppose sex education in our public schools. Please notice that I did not say, because I do not believe, that morally responsible people will have to fight against sex education. We will have to use our influence to stop the so-called morally neutral sex education which Dr. Elders and her boss want to install in our schools. I do not want to be mean about this topic, but the time has come for plain speaking. I intend to speak plainly today. Obviously, if you have questions or objections about any position which I take in today's lesson, you are urged to get in touch with me. Josh McDowell, an internationally known speaker and traveling representative of Campus Crusade for Christ, summarized the findings on sex education in his outstanding book, The Myths of Sex Education. This book ought to be in the hands of every parent, every educator, and every legislator in the United States. It would remove from the minds of all honest readers the myth that sex education, as proposed by Planned Parenthood and as currently taught in thousands of schools across America, will reduce the number of children born out of wedlock, as Dr. Elders contends. Josh McDowell gives an abundance of statistics to show what is happening to our young people in this great nation. He records these statistics from the New York Times. Some studies indicate that 3/4 of all girls have had sex during their teen years, and 15% have 4 or more partners. The Washington Post says that more than half of all American teen girls have had sex by the age of 15. Page 8. The American Journal of Diseases of Children reveals these facts about 677 7th, 8th, and 9th graders in a mostly white lower middle class junior high school in Indianapolis, Indiana. Please remember that these are 12, 13, and 14-year-old children. 55% had had sex. 18% had had one sexual experience. 30% had had more than one experience. 7% had had multiple partners. 50+% of the boys had had sex by the age of 13, and 50+% of the girls had engaged in sex by the age of 15. Page 8. The New York firm audits and surveys posed 41 questions to 1,300 high school students in 16 high schools around the United States, 1,600 students in 10 colleges, and 500 parents of teens in 12 cities. They did not poll the impoverished inner city or rural areas. They wanted to get a reading of the mainstream adolescent. This is what they discovered. 57% lost their virginity in high school. 79% lost their virginity by the end of college. 33% of the high school students engaged in sex once a month to once a week. 52% of the college students had had sex once a month to once a week. Page 9. Dr. William Bennett, former Secretary of Education, stated, "The statistics by which we measure how our children, how our boys and girls are treating one another sexually are little short of staggering." Then he reported some of the heartbreaking statistics. More than 1 million teenage girls in the United States become pregnant every year. Of those who give birth, nearly half are not yet 18. Teen pregnancy rates are at or near an all-time high. A 25% decline in birth rates between 1970 and 1984 was due to a doubling of the abortion rate during that period. More than 400,000 teenage girls now have abortions every year. Unwed teen births rose 200% between 1960 and 1980. 40% of today's 14-year-old girls will become pregnant by the time they're 19. These numbers, confessed Dr. Bennett, are an irrefutable indictment of sex education's effectiveness in reducing teenage sexual activity and pregnancies. Page 10. Planned Parenthood, SECUS, which stands for Sex Information and Education Council of the United States, and other radical groups have taught for years that sex education will stem the tide of teen pregnancies, of abortions on demand, and of sexually transmitted diseases. Dr. Elders foolishly and ignorantly agrees with these baby-killing, immorality-promoting, and family-destroying organizations. The Tennessean quotes Dr. Elders as saying, "Schools teach driver education. But when we come to health education, which includes sexuality education, we refuse to teach them that." Page 1A. Is Dr. Elders not aware that teaching young people to drive is somewhat different than teaching them about sexual functioning? Our physical appetites, our attraction to the opposite sex, especially in critical situations, may not be altered by what a teacher has said in the classroom, especially if sex education is presented from a so-called morally neutral viewpoint. Besides, there is ample evidence to show that some teachers actually stimulate young people to engage in illicit sexual behavior. They present the exciting, beautiful aspects of sexual communion without telling young people about the dangers of sexually transmitted diseases, the heartaches for the girl who has to have an abortion, or whose life changes drastically forever when she decides to bear a child out of wedlock. When people like Dr. Elders talk about sex education, they're not taking into consideration the downside of sexual promiscuity. They are leading our young people and many others down the primrose path. My friends, I do not want to overwhelm you with statistics, but there are some facts regarding sex education which are made more impressive by giving some statistics. For example, the Wall Street Journal reports that $11 million were spent on sex education in 1971 and $442 million in 1981. During that time, pregnancy rates for girls from 15 to 19 increased about 250%, from 180,000 to 430,000. It is true, as Planned Parenthood contends, that the number of teenage births decreased, but not because of a decrease in sexual activity or an increase in the use of contraceptives. The decrease in teenage births was related directly to the increase in the number of abortions. Josh McDowell gives the results of a study conducted by Dr. Joseph Olson and Dr. Stan Weed. Here are the conclusions of the Olson-Weed study. Lower teenage birth rates, higher abortion rates, no reduction in teenage pregnancy rates. Apparently, the programs are more effective at convincing teens to avoid birth than to avoid pregnancy. Page 124. Susan Roylance compared 15 states with similar social demographics and rates of teenage pregnancy in 1970. Testifying before the U.S. Senate Committee on Labor and Human Resources, March the 31st, 1981, she reported that states with the highest rate of governmental expenditures on birth control also had the greatest increases in abortion and illegitimate births between 1970 and 1979. If these facts do not cause you to stop and wonder if our government is spending its money foolishly on sex education and on birth control, I would not know how to get your attention. Planned Parenthood's own journal, Family Planning Perspectives, admitted that teenage contraception was not cutting down on the tide of pregnancies. More teenagers, the journal article said, are using contraceptives and using them more consistently than ever before. Yet the number and rate of premarital pregnancies continue to rise. Dr. Jacqueline Casson, a highly respected social researcher from Humboldt State University in California, has written extensively on family issues. In Josh McDowell's book, The Myths of Sex Education, some extensive remarks about sex education in California are recorded. Please listen carefully to Dr. Casson. California has provided and promoted sex education at all grade levels. It has sent pregnancy counselors into schools and has provided and promoted contraceptives and abortions to teenagers at public expense without parental knowledge. In the process, California has consistently spent twice as much as the national average on government-funded birth control. And what are the results? By 1981, about 20 years after the sex education programs were introduced in California, California's teenage pregnancy rate rose to a level 30% above the national average, and the teenage abortion rate more than tripled. After years of extremely high expenditures and effort in this area, we have the highest rate of teen pregnancy in the entire nation and the highest rate of teen abortion. Page 128. Josh McDowell received this personal communication from Dr. Casson. In Humboldt County, California, where we have several model programs and government family planning, expenditures per person have been much higher than in the nation, and adolescent pregnancy has increased 10 times as much as in the nation. The reason this increase in pregnancy has not resulted in an increase in birth is that Humboldt County has had a greater than 1,000% increase in teenage abortions during the past decade, more than 15 times the rest of the nation. Page 128. In the face of all this evidence that sex education and contraceptive availability have a negative influence on young people's sexual behavior, how can our government continue to spend billions of dollars on comprehensive sex education programs? But there is much more evidence which we must consider. Dr. Larry Cuban, professor of education at Stanford University in California, says very plainly, decade after decade, statistics have demonstrated the ineffectiveness of such courses in reducing sexual activity and teenage pregnancy. In the arsenal of weapons to combat teenage pregnancy, school-based programs are but a bent arrow. However, bent arrows do offer the illusion of action. Page 129. For some reason which I cannot fathom, many liberal educators and politicians have decided that the Scandinavian countries are the perfect ideal for sexual functioning and sex education. I have real problems with this foolish notion. The government of Denmark introduced compulsory sex education in 1970. The Danish government has reported the following disturbing facts. Abortion rates have doubled. Illegitimate births have nearly doubled. And sexually transmitted disease rates more than doubled. It sounds to me if there is trouble in paradise. Roland Huntford, a Scandinavian correspondent for the London Observer, wrote a book with the title The New Totalitarians. Huntford affirms that Sweden is anything but a sexual paradise. Listen to him. License to engage in sexual intimacy has led to a sexual obsession pervading the whole Swedish life. It has brought in its train a certain amount of mental illness. This is a subject on which the authorities are silent, and the organizers of sexual instruction prone to concealment. Nevertheless, it seems to have been established that much of expanding neuroses among schoolchildren and students is to be attributed to the failure in the sexual rat race. Nervous breakdowns on this account are not uncommon. The suicide rate among Sweden's teenagers is the highest in the world, 3 times higher than in the United States, where we are experiencing an epidemic of teenage suicides. My friends, do you know what will reduce, I did not say stop, the rise in teenage pregnancies, teenage abortions, and the increase of venereal diseases among our young people? Let me conclude our discussion today with a few suggestions. The fundamental way to halt teenage promiscuity is teaching values in the home. I'm aware that parents blame television, the movies, the schools, and about everybody else in society. But God demands that parents teach their children about life, which includes instructing them about their bodies. The word nurture in Ephesians 6:4 means to teach every idea and every truth which young people must know to live a full and successful life. The word nurture requires parents to teach their children about human sexual functioning. Getting your children and young people involved in church activities does not guarantee honorable sexual behavior, but it will go a long way in stopping the tragedy of teenage sexual promiscuity. Planned Parenthood commissioned Lou Harris to conduct a poll on teenage sexual behavior. And this is what he reported. 79% of the young people who frequently attended religious services have never engaged in sexual intimacy. Dr. Alfred Kinsey found a direct correlation between being actively connected with church activities and abstaining from non-marital sexual behavior. Dr. Jacqueline Casson examined all the studies relating to sex education. She concluded that regular church attendance is the strongest positive influence on the sexual behavior of girls over the age of 17. Her conclusions are confirmed by the 1986 Lou Harris poll for Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood's own research, performed by Dr. Deborah Ann Dawson, agrees that church attendance one or more times a week reduces the odds of the first sexual experience for all ages. In view of the material I have presented to you today, of which Dr. Elders could not be ignorant, how can she or anyone else propose a national comprehensive sex education program? Will you please speak out against this moral outrage proposed by the Clinton administration? My friends, we thank you for listening today. Please continue to listen. Until the next time we're together, thank you and may God bless you.